Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is blackjack and poker player and radio personality, Joe Payne. Among other things, he'll be responding to allegations made against him on this show 3 weeks ago. We'll be talking to Joe in a few minutes. New Jersey starts a 5-day trial of internet gaming today, expecting to go live next week if there are no serious problems. We've been looking forward to this. We'd appreciate some feedback from our listeners on how this is going. Please write to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Munch, are you thinking this is going to go forward without a hitch?
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure there'll be a few bumps in the road as they first get started, but there are a lot of software providers that have been doing this for over 10 years now, so I don't see any problems in that regard.
All right. We received a question on question two, gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. about a video poker progressive. It seems an unnamed casino has a quarter 10 play game that starts out as 7-5 jacks or better. The bottom line has the progressive on it, often getting to about $10,000. And the rest of the lines tap out at 4,000 coins each, which on a quarter machine is $1,000. The player wants to know how to analyze this. First of all, 7-5 jacks starts out at a pitiful 96.15%. At a progressive meter of 10,000 coins, the return becomes 99.67%. While this is still a losing game, depending on the slot club and promotions, I'm going to use this figure because it's easier to talk about round numbers on the radio. 10,000 coins per line means 100,000 coins per 10 lines. 9 of the lines top out at 4,000 each. That adds up to 36,000. So the progressive has to have a royal of 64,000 coins to make the average 10,000. 64,000 quarters means $16,000, which obviously is quite a bit more than $10,000. Even if you do find the royal high enough, I hope you have deep pockets. The base game is so tight that you will likely lose quite a bit of money before you hit the royal, if you ever hit the royal. All right, let's talk to Joe Payne. On Halloween night, October 31st, the guest on this show was journalist Scott Bell, who has produced a documentary film called Ultimate Beat, which speaks about the scandals in the Ultimate Bet online poker and blackjack site, which Russ Hamilton ultimately fell on his sword and took the blame for the entire mess. The film showed a lot of pictures of people, but it doesn't always explain why they are in the film. We asked Scott about this in general, and Bell said he believed he was a careful journalist and every person in the film had something to do with the scandal. There were a number of people Munchkin could have asked about at this point, but with 2 minutes left in the show, Richard asked about Joe Payne. There's a 5 to 10 second scene in the film where Joe is mentioning that his family has some mob connections, but it's really unclear why this scene is in the movie. Bell's answer included, among other things, that Joe has been a friend of Russ Hamilton for a number of years, worked in the offices of Ultimate Bet, and was a moderator on some Ultimate Bet internet forums. Bell said he tried to interview Joe Payne, but Joe acted guilty, in Bell's opinion, and threatened to sue if he was mentioned at all. Bell says his evidence was admittedly circumstantial, but his personal belief was that Payne was knowledgeable about everything that went down at Ultimate Bet. And then the show ended. Okay. When Joe heard what Bell said, he felt unjustly accused and immediately called us up, wanted to come on the air and give his rebuttal. We'd already booked guests for November 7th and 14th, so tonight's the first chance we've had to get Joe on the air. So, Joe Payne, in 5 minutes or less, what do you say about all of this?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you and Richard, for giving me the opportunity to at least tell my side of the story, so to speak. One thing I really want to make very, very clear right from the go is I do not condone, have never condoned any of the stuff that went on or allegedly went on Ultimate Bet. I mean, obviously there is some sort of proof that things went on, but who's actually guilty? I don't know if that's actually been proven. So I just want to make that very, very clear. Now, am I friends with Russ Hamilton and Kenny Einiger? Yes, I am. I don't think that's a crime to be their friend. As a matter of fact, I'm friends with a lot of other poker players who played on UB and who may or may have not been mentioned in this film. And I'm gonna refer to it as a movie, because documentaries are supposed to be exactly that, a documented film that presents facts, presented in a timeline, so the follower, the person viewing the documentary can follow the story, so to speak. This is a movie because Scott Bell has taken artistic latitude with, especially concerning me. First of all, I didn't work for Ultimate Bet. I worked for the Ultimate Blackjack Tour, which is completely different. The Ultimate Blackjack Tour was not a gambling site that was operating outside the United States. It was a legal thing that Russ Hamilton created, trying to bring blackjack to the forefront. You have to understand that poker players, and especially big-time poker players, the casinos roll out the red carpet for these guys. Other poker players want to come in and play against them. The only carpet that's rolled out for advantage blackjack players is a carpet that the casino would like to roll you up into and beat with a baseball bat and then throw you in a dumpster in the back. So Russ was attempting to allow blackjack players to be welcome in casinos. And part of the deal that he worked out with any casino that was hosting Ultimate Blackjack Tour tournaments was that if the casino did not want this particular player playing at their tables, they would sign a release saying that they're coming in to play the tournament only, and they signed this release, and if they were to even venture over to the tables, they would be thrown at the casino and barred from the tournament. So Russ was able to get that accomplished. And like I said before, I think Scott Bell's intentions here were sincere. I think he really wanted to uncover exactly what happened as far as people losing millions and millions of dollars. But when he starts slinging my name and other people's names, like Kenny Einiger, who had nothing at all to do with this, I mean, then it doesn't it loses the status of being a documentary. It's now a fictitious movie because he's using circumstantial evidence. Yes, did I work in the Ultimate Blackjack Tour office? Absolutely. Was there cheating going on from other computers in that office? I have no knowledge of that. But Bob and Richard, that would be like saying if I worked in an office and the person either two offices down or next cubicle was committing some sort of internet crime, that I would be guilty also because I'm accessing the internet through the same server as he is. I mean, it's Scott Bell, it's a stretch here. And I think Scott Bell is listening in because I emailed him last night and told him that I was going to make him an offer he couldn't refuse. Actually, maybe I shouldn't say that because he's already accused me of having mob connections. Maybe I'm going to make you an offer you shouldn't refuse. And I'm going to get to that in a second as far as my offer to you.
Can we get to it and finish it up in about 2 minutes or so?
We can.
Okay. All right.
Scott, you also said on the show that you communicated with me or attempted to communicate with me and I wouldn't talk to you. That's not true. Scott and I exchanged numerous emails between December of 2012 and February of 2013. He kept on asking me if I want to tell my side of the story. And basically what I told Scott was that, Scott, I don't have a side of a story. I don't know what went on. I became friends with Russ Hamilton in 2006, and only because of the Ultimate Blackjack Tour. I had nothing to do with Ultimate Bet. I didn't work for them. I have no knowledge of it. And so for him to accuse me of being one of the key figures in this cheating scandal, even though he says it's circumstantial, it's absurd to even think that I would be part of this. I mean, it's insane. So the proposal or the offer I would like to offer Scott Bell here, and I know Kenny Einiger's offered him a similar offer, but it was a little bit more money that may be out of Scott Bell's comfort range. Scott Bell, here's what I'm willing to offer you. You put up $100, I'll put up $20,000, and I'll take a polygraph under oath, and you can ask me any of the following questions. And if I don't answer, if I don't truthfully answer no to each of every one of these questions, I get your $100 and I keep my $20,000. You can ask me this question. Did you, Joe Payne, have any personal knowledge of the UB cheating scandal while it was going on? Question two, did you, Joe Payne, profit in any way from the Ultimate Bet cheating scandal? And question three, did you, Joe Payne, did you knowingly send or receive any monies to and from any of your Ultimate Bet accounts that was acquired through cheating? Those answers will all be no, but Scott Bell would like everyone to believe that I was part of the cheating scam. So, Scott, there is your offer. I'll put up $20,000. You put up $100,000. I don't think you're going to take it, Scott, because you know why? I know you know that I had nothing to do with this, and you were trying to embellish this movie by somehow thinking I'm some big-name blackjack player, and you're going to throw me into the mix to make it interesting. You know, the last person to publicly defame me was a casino host at Green Valley Ranch by the name of Matt Sacca. And he and Green Valley Ranch pay pretty handsomely for calling me a cheater. Scott, I don't think you want to join that crowd.
All right.
Actually, we're going to get into that story in a little bit because that's an interesting story. But I wanted to let's put that behind us and talk about blackjack tournaments, because you did get involved with the Ultimate Blackjack Tour because of you had a lot of experience playing blackjack tournaments. So are you still playing blackjack tournaments, and are there still many blackjack tournaments out there to play?
Well, the first part of the question is, no, I'm not playing a lot of blackjack tournaments now. And part of the reason is that while the Ultimate Blackjack Tour was going on, the All In magazine came up with a rating system similar to how they rate poker players, player of the year, so to speak. And I happen to have a very strong 2007 and 2008, and I was named the number one blackjack tournament player in the country. And that was published in All In magazine. And once that came out, I was pretty much taboo in all the casinos. They wouldn't let me play anymore. So do I play in blackjack tournaments? I still do play in blackjack tournaments, but none of the big tournaments anymore, because even ones that have an entry fee, they won't let me in, which is ridiculous because the players are creating the prize pool. I can understand if it was an invitational tournament, Richard, where the casino's putting up $100,000 and they're inviting players in with the hope that when they win a tournament, they're going to stay and dump the chips back into the casino's cage, you know. When myself or other Advantage players win, that does not happen. We're walking out the door with the money. But there are two tournaments that come to mind that are very, very good that take place here in Las Vegas at the Orleans Casino on Saturday and Sunday. They're $25 buy-ins, and they have a prize pool of $1,000 guaranteed for first place, $2,000 prize pool. And it's pretty good. They take no juice. So blackjack Advantage players like to play in tournaments or playing games where they have either an edge or they're not giving up anything. So my recommendation for anybody out there that likes to play blackjack tournaments, the Orleans on Saturday and Sunday is the place to be.
So it's a two-day tournament?
No, they have two separate tournaments, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. The one on Saturday used to be $50, and the one on Sunday was $25. But they were not getting, you know, it's mostly locals. Locals don't really like to play in bigger events, so they were not getting a big turnout for the $50 one. So they converted to make both days now. Two separate tournaments, $25 buy-in, three rounds, and you can play if you do not make it in the first round, you can buy back in usually for round three. But by that time, if you play round two, it's usually sold out by the time if you get knocked out, so you can't play round three.
The whole thing takes about how many hours?
The first three rounds are an hour each, so that's 3 hours. The semifinal is about 45 minutes, so about 5 hours total if you make the final table.
Okay.
Very good. It sounds like good.
Yeah, it's
blackjack tournament.
It's a great, you know,
practice on for low rollers, basically.
And blackjack tournaments, any tournament, the pot at the end of the rainbow, so to speak, is much larger than what you risk. I mean, over the years in blackjack tournaments, I've won just shy of $1 million in blackjack tournaments and dice tournaments, and that's probably one of the reasons why I'm not allowed to play anymore, because I've won them and basically walked out the door with the money, which is not the intentions, the marketing aspect of tournaments. The casinos want you to win and then dump it back to them.
All right. You mentioned suing GVR because they said nasty things about you on the show American Casino.
Well, actually, I can talk about the case. I just can't talk about the amount of money that was part of the settlement. But I will tell you this. I can't say specifically how much they gave me, but it was a pretty nice chump of change. It was similar
so
to winning.
So what did they actually say about you?
What happened was Matt Sacker, they were filming the show American Casino for the Discovery Channel. And I guess Matt Sacker had the same opinion as Scott Bell does, that, well, how do I juice up my show here? How do I make my movie more interesting? Well, let's portray Joe Payne as a cheater. And Matt Sacker said on national TV, Joe Payne cheats. And then it was a pause, and he said, well, mostly for card counting. Well, hey, Matt Sacker, card counting is not cheating. If you can use your brain to keep track of the cards and not use any mechanical electrical device, it's not cheating. So they basically called me a cheater because I was a proficient card counter. And I sued them over that.
On national television.
On national television.
Card counting isn't particularly useful in tournaments anyway.
Actually, that's a great, great point, Bob. Card counting is useless in blackjack tournaments unless, and there's been only one tournament that I ever played in where card counting actually was beneficial to me or any other Advantage player. There was a tournament held at the Imperial Palace, which now is the Quad, where it was called old-fashioned Las Vegas blackjack. And it was a single deck, and they did not burn a card, and they dealt all 52 cards out. That would may be the only tournament where if you were a proficient card counter, you had a distinct advantage, especially when the dealer got down to one or two cards. If you knew, and I use Rivera's system, so I pretty much know certain cards, their value in a certain, I would know at the end, if there was a 9 left, I would know that the next card, the only card left is a 9. If I have a 12, now you'd be insane to double on a 12 against a dealer's 10, but if I know there's only one card left and it's a 9, guess what? I have a free double and I'm guaranteed to make 21. And a situation arose where we got down, and you get to know a lot of people in a blackjack. We were playing the game, and there was one card left, and it happened to be a 9. And I said, that card's a 9, even though I was already done with my hand, and the next player took a hit, and it was a 9. Everybody looked at me like, wow.
Is the 9 is the only 0 count card?
No,
only minus 1 count card.
In the Revere APC count, the 9 has a 2 value.
And a 10 has a...
10 has a, all 10s are minus 3. The 5s are plus 4. Aces are minus 4. So that's why on the Revere count, you can get really specific as to what card is left in the deck. And once in a while, when some of my friends would come to Vegas who are not professional players or card counters or advantage players, I'll take a single deck of cards and I'll just shuffle it up and make them cut it, and then I'll peel the deck off. And when we get down to the last one or two cards, I'll tell them, I won't be able to tell them the suit, but I'll be able to tell him what the card is.
Very good.
So what happened? So he called you a cheat on national television, and you filed a suit. And
I went. Actually,
did they settle right away? Or?
No. Here's what happened. I went to Oscar Goodman's office, and because they had represented me in another case where I was injured in a casino, so I went to Oscar Goodman's office. You know, mob attorney. Figured, hey, he'll be able to take this case. And they were not interested in taking the case unless I just wanted to sue the Discovery Channel, because they told me that the Fertittas do a lot of good work in the community with scholarships and all that, and they were not interested in suing the Fertittas if I wanted just to sue the Discovery Channel, they would take the case. And then at this point, I didn't know who Bob Nassessian was. And a friend of mine who's in a vantage place says, you need to go see Bob. And I brought down a copy of the show to Bob, and we sat in his office and watched it. And Bob got all giggly because he goes, we finally have it. He says, you know, a lot of times a casino executive will say something to you as far as, you know, we don't want you to play, we think you're cheating, whatever. But it's not publicly where it's public. But he, this casino employee, Matt Sacker, actually said on national TV that I was a cheater. So we now have a casino representative from a major corporation, major casino corporation here in Las Vegas, calling me a cheater. Now, if you're a cheater in Las Vegas in a casino, that's a felony if you're cheating. Why aren't they taking me away in handcuffs if I'm a cheater? Because they know I wasn't a cheater, but they wanted to embellish the story. So they called me a cheater, and they paid pretty handsomely to have that privilege.
That's good. Happy to hear it.
Yeah, and eventually Matt Sacker, not eventually, Matt Sacker lost his job.
Go figure.
At Green Valley Ranch, and I don't know. I don't know whether he actually lost it because of this case. And I actually ran into the casino manager, maybe like 6 months after we settled the case at Home Depot. And I walked into the casino manager's name was Bill Burt, and he basically was in the film too. And I said, Bill, I hope there's no hard feelings here. And he said, Joe, you did what you had to do. My hands were tired. I was kind of forced to do what I had to do. Because I was playing a blackjack tournament at Green Valley Ranch that day. And I had made the semifinals, and Bill Burt and a shift manager come up and surrounded me and told me, we don't want you here in the casino. I'm like, why? And he says, you've been backed off by the former shift manager there, which they didn't know at the time. I was actually dating the shift manager after she left. After she left the industry, I had a relationship with her. And I even said to her when we were dating, I said, why did you never back me off when I was playing blackjack in your casino? And she said there were two reasons why I didn't back you off. One is that you weren't greedy, and you were spreading small enough, and I used you to train my floor people. And I said, what do you mean you used me? She said, I would send when you came in the casino, I would send my floor people out and have them watch your game, and I wanted them to count while the deck was coming out and then look at your bets and see if their count was correct. If you had a big bet out, or you know, if you jumped a couple of units on your bet and they had either a negative or an even count, then obviously they made a mistake. So she used me for the longest time to train her floor people. And I always would wonder, because most of the time if you go into a casino on a certain shift, the same floor person is usually in that pit. But every once in a while, the floor person would change. And what she was doing was basically holding a class for card counting amongst her staff and using me as the instructor, which was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah.
Well, probably you got paid well to be the instructor if you were allowed to play unimpeded.
Before I lived here in Las Vegas, I used to bet a little bit bigger because you're able to do that. You come here for 2-3 days and you can pretty much spread considerable amount of money around. But I found once I moved here in 2000, that all ended for me.
Yes.
You know, because there were some really juicy games when Bellagio first opened up and the Palms first opened up. And there were games that I would going and playing 4 or 5 times a week. And so eventually, you know, you just start to wear your welcome mat out, because, you know, you playing low green to medium black, you know, that kind of a spread, that you're not going to last too long in this town.
I agree.
You were talking about them enhancing their television show, and it brought to mind there was another television show about casinos in Las Vegas, and this one was all centered around the Golden Nugget. And there was a guy that we both know, a guy named Chuck Gorson, yeah, was on the show.
Lovely Chuck.
And the episode with him involved a hooker at the table who was clearly a guy in drag. And he ended up in the show going up to his room with this transvestite hooker.
Right.
And I don't know. The whole thing looked clearly like it was.
Ironically, if Scott Bell would have. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Richard.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, if Scott Bell would have called Chuck Gorson a cheater, I don't think there would have been anybody lined up disputing that fact, because Chuck Gorson was a cheater. I knew Chuck personally, and he would cheat anyone, including his friends, which is really...
Actually, I played in a blackjack tournament with Chuck and was 100% sure he had hidden chips, I had counted down his stack, and then suddenly he had an extra $5,000 chip that was not there when I counted him down.
Richard, I'm going to tell you a funny but sad story. There was a blackjack tournament. It used to be the casino was named the Reserve. It's now Fiesta Henderson, which Bob has given video poker lessons at.
It's been a number of years. Before and after it changed names.
And Chuck was at the final table with this little old lady, and the little old lady had Chuck beat when the last hand was completed. I was watching the tournament, and I knew what the exact count was. And she was ahead of Chuck going into the last hand. Chuck bet first, he bet max. She matched them. They both won the hand, which means the lady won because they both won the same amount of money. Chuck inadvertently, accidentally, on purpose, knocked his chips over, and they fell into her chips. And, of course, when he stacked the chips back up, Chuck had more money than the lady and won the tournament. And it was just – it was a crime, and it was a $1,000 prize pool. And he beat this lady beat him fair and square, and Chuck knocked the chips over on purpose. And, of course, when he stacked them, he was like, "Helpful, let me help you stack them back up, ma'am." But when he did, she didn't get her chips back.
Wow. Now, you have another story about Chuck his daughter's wedding, was it?
Nope, his wife's surprise 40th birthday party.
How could she not know when her 40th birthday was coming?
Well, he was. But what happened was he invited about 30 couples. She knew it was her birthday, but he was holding us like a surprise get-together for her at the Voodoo Lounge at the Rio Hotel.
Uh-huh. You're taking my smart-ass thing more seriously than it deserves. So go on with the story.
So Chuck had invited me to the party, and at this time I was not living in Las Vegas. I was living back in New Jersey at that point. I had moved from New York to New Jersey. And I said, "Chuck, I do appreciate the invite." I said, "But... I'm not going to be able to make it." I wasn't coming out to Vegas as much then because I had I owned an athletic footwear store back in Brooklyn, New York. So that kind of took a lot of my time up. He said, "I'd love for you to come, but if you don't come, I could use a room because I got like 30 different couples coming." And I said, "Chuck, I'd be more than happy to get you a comp room at the Rio." What Chuck failed to realize is that my host at the Rio was a personal friend of my wife. They went to high school together. So whenever someone called through reservations to book a trip, he would always call me and say, "Oh, by the way, Joe, you're coming out. Do you want me to send a limo out to the airport for you?" And so when Chuck made the reservation in my name, which I didn't know he was doing, by the way, he also lined up a limo to be picked up at the airport. He just didn't get a room, Richard. He got like a two-bedroom suite in my name. And then he booked. He had like, I believe it was like 60 people party at the Voodoo Lounge. He charged 20, or was attempting to charge one-third of the party to my comp account. But what happened was the friend of mine who was the host called me to, "Hey, Joe, I see you coming in next week." And I'm like, "I'm not coming in." He goes, "I have a reservation." I said to him, "Check, is there somebody else that's associated with my reservation?" He goes, "Yeah, you're staying with a buddy named Charles Gawson?" I said, "Figures." So he says, I told him what happened. He goes, "Well, I'll cancel the reservation." I said, "No, don't cancel the reservation. Pick him up at the airport, let him come, let him go in a room, let him get all settled, and then come up and throw him out." And that's what they did. They picked him up at the airport. He went up to the suite. He was up there for like an hour or two. He was ordering room service. So when a knock on the door came, he thought it was going to be his shrimp cocktail and steaks or whatever he ordered. It was security asking him for, "Can you show me that you're Joe Payne?" And obviously, he didn't have my ID. He had my information. He knew my date of birth and all that. So he was escorted out of the Rio. I'm not really sure what happened to the party at the Voodoo Lounge, but so he was attempting to steal all of my comp dollars because, as we do know, the Voodoo Lounge is not a cheap place. And so I was going to get charged for like 20 guests at the Voodoo Lounge.
Interesting.
Amazing.
Now, there's a story you had about the gold spike where you were successfully hole carding, and it was also a royal match table or something like that. How did that work?
Okay. Usually when a bunch of us would play tournaments here in Las Vegas on the Sunday night right before all the guys went home, they usually left on Monday morning, we'd get down to the gold spike and just just cut it up and have some fun. They had $2 to $50 max tape, max bet table, single deck. And we would just go down there and basically sit there, bet $2. And when the count got really good, we'd all bet $50. And that this particular night, the deck was just, even though the count was good, the, we were just getting hit with the deck. And we were beating them for a couple hundred dollars, which is a big hit for the gold spike. And they were sweating the money big time. So they pulled the dealer off the game. And they relatively have a lot of break-in dealers down there. And they put a new dealer in. And you knew this guy was a new dealer because his shirt was sparkling white. It might have been his first day or his second. So kidding around, I say to the dealer, you know, if a dealer's dealing you seconds, his thumb will not move. If you're getting dealt seconds, the dealer's thumb will not move. In order for the dealer to give you the top card, his thumb must move. So kidding around, I say to the dealer, hey, I want to make sure that you're not dealing from the bottom because I know they're mad that we're winning so much money, so I want to see your thumb moving. Well, I guess I kind of shook this kid up so much that, and I was sitting on third base, that he was making such an effort to get the card out that when he went to go put his whole card in, he kind of picked it up and exposed it to me on third base. So I had two buddies who were sitting at the table, and I looked at one of my buddies, and I said to him, I mouthed to him, queen, telling him that the dealer had a queen in the hole. And he looked at me and went, yeah, right. And I said, of spades. And when the dealer turned over the card, it was the queen of spades. They were like, we stopped counting because at this point, you know, as Richard would know, you maybe you're playing with anywhere between a 1% and a 3.5% advantage county cards. But if you're seeing a dealer's whole card, by the way, which is not cheating, by the way, that's an advantage play.
In Nevada, it isn't.
It's not.
Don't do that in Michigan at tribal casinos.
Right. If the dealer is sloppy and not trained well, and you can see the whole card when he or she is putting it under their card, it is not illegal to see that. And as a matter of fact, it's not even illegal to communicate to fellow players at the table, if you can. Obviously, you can't say it out loud, but if you have a fellow player at the table, you can somehow signal to them what the dealer's whole card is. Well, this dealer was exposing their whole card to me every time, and it was great. I mean, and I had this little kid sitting next to me, young Spanish kid, and he liked to play the royal match. He wasn't hitting on his hand, and I was, but I'm not paying attention. I don't play. It's a bad bet to begin with, and I'm not really caring if my two cards are suited. I'm just caring what my hand is as compared to what the dealer's hand is. He says to me, you know, sir, you're getting like match cards all the time. He says, can I play a dollar on your hand? I said, sure you can. So he puts a dollar on a real match bet, and a floor comes running over and pushes the dollar back to him. No, you can't play on... You can only play the raw match on your own spot. So I turned to the kid and said, do you really want to play on my hand? He goes, yeah. I said, give me the dollar. So he gives me the dollar, and I take the dollar, and I put it on my raw match bet. Well, the floor comes back over and says, you've been told. They threw him out of the casino. Here we are. We're sitting there betting max bets of $50, seeing the dealer's whole card. And they threw this kid out who was betting $2 and put a dollar on the royal match. They threw him out because he wanted to play the dollar on my spot, which is, I mean, sometimes you scratch your head on the decisions that these casino suits make. It's incredible.
And that's why that genius was working at the gold spike.
Now, we used to go down and knowing full well, we can spread 2 to 50. Nobody's really going to even understand what we're doing. And then when we see in the whole card and they throw the kid out who's making a bad bet to begin with, it was hysterical. We were laughing so hard. It was just like, and then when the dealer went away in the game, we were like, oh, wow. You get so spoiled when you're playing at a double-digit advantage with seeing the dealer's whole card.
It's sweet.
So what was the – they had a red-black bet?
Yes, this
Atlantic
is a
City?
Very interesting story, and I'm glad you brought that up. A friend of mine who lives in New Jersey by the name of Jimmy D'Ambrosio is a math genius, and he spends, I'm going to say, close to 250 days a year in a casino. Mad genius, but he refuses to count cards. He says he wants to go to a casino, and he wants to have a good time because he says counting cards is like work. Well, he discovers this game that's being spread at Bally's and the Wild Wild West. And anybody who's been to Atlantic City knows those two casinos are actually connected. You can actually go from one to the other without ever going outside. Well, they offered this game, and I believe the name of the game is Red Black, where you can bet whether your two cards that you're going to receive on your first two cards of your hand are either going to be two red cards or two black cards. Game was approved by the Gaming Commission in New Jersey. The proper payout was three 4-1, but when they made the layout, or whoever discovered the game or invented the game, made the payout 3-2-1.
Just that little difference.
Just that slight little difference. And in Atlantic City, unlike Las Vegas, when they burn the first card, they show it to you in Atlantic City. So right off the top of the deck, when they show you the red card, you know that you have a very small edge, but you have obviously the play is black. And so we played that game and for a while, for almost a day and a half. And what happened was, I'm not going to mention who I went down there with, but it was a couple of other Advantage players. And in this game particularly, there was other side bets where you can bet whether you're going to get dealt a 17, 18, 19, or 20. I'm not going to say the name, but the initials of the player is KS, really smart, intelligent guy, one of the top blackjack tournament players around. Well, he came up with a count system in addition to a count system. So we would do a side count of eights and nines. There were three of us at the table on the team. One guy was tracking the reds and the blacks. I was tracking the eights and nines. And he was the player by the name of with the initials of KS was doing the count. And whenever the count was plus and there was a void of eights or nines, we would bet 18 and 19. And the three of us would just go out, max bet of $100. And it was, I don't remember the exact payout, but it was double digits. And we were hitting these bets left and right, and we must have won, I'm going to say, somewhere between $36,000 and $40,000 in a couple of hours. And the player, KS, said to me, listen, there's probably going to be a point where they're not going to know what we're doing, but they're going to cut the shoe in literally in half on us. He said, it's worked $150 an hour dealing full deck. If they cut the shoe in half, it's still worth $75 an hour. Do you guys want to work for $75 an hour? And I'm like, yeah, I'll sit there for $75 an hour. So eventually, after a couple of hours, they did cut the shoe directly in half on us, and we were still playing. And they were baffled at this point because they were like, wow, we thought they would leave. Well, by the next day when we came down, eight deck shoe, they cut off seven decks of the eight, and most of the squares that were sitting at the table expect to sit down and play for a good 30 minutes with an eight-deck shoe without the shuffle. Well, after about 2 or 3 minutes, the cut card comes out, and they're looking at each other like, what happened? Why is the cut card out? The rest of the deck. And they called the floor over and said, why are we shuffling for? We hardly even got a deck out. And the floor turned and said, ask those guys right there, pointing to us. And we like kind of went, I don't know what they're doing. At that point, we stopped playing. Obviously, if they're only dealing one deck out of eight, then the advantage is no longer there. But we didn't discover the next day they were going to do that.
I've seen, well, it's still, I've you seen still have variations it. Of that idea show up. I think the first time was close to 30 years ago. And every time it shows up, it just gets hammered immediately and taken back out. And somebody thinks, some genius thinks they've invented a new game, but 10 years later and out it comes again. So
I'll give you a promotion that – and the casino managers that come up with these this promotion, they should be fired immediately because it's a proven fact. You cannot offer 2-to-1 on blackjacks. And every once in a while, somewhere in the country, comes casino manager decides, I'm going to pay 2-to-1 on blackjacks for the next 4 days. And yeah. Once the word gets out, every player in the country is heading to that casino, and you don't have to count. And Richard will tell you, all you do is sit there, you play as many spots as you can, and you bet as much as you can. And you're almost going to be a guaranteed winner unless the standard deviation just, kicks you in the butt, basically. But so there was one recently where myself, and I won't mention the name of the player, but he's a member of the MIT team and featured very proudly in the movie 21. Him and I flew into Oklahoma and met another player who has lived in Mississippi, and we went there and played, but we didn't last too long. We were there for about an hour before they shut us down. And the funny part about it is that we tried to go back that night on the airlines, and they wanted to charge us $1,600 just to change our plane ticket. And being Advantage players, we weren't going to pay that. So we had to rent a car. So we called the rental car company and said, hey, can we drop the car off in Las Vegas? And they said, you can if you get it back there by, I forget what the time was. And it was like, we needed to get in the car right then and drive straight through to get back before we would incur the big charge. So there's an Advantage play. Instead of paying the fee for the change of tickets, it was a horrible drive driving through the states all the way back to Las Vegas and getting back by a certain time.
Driving through
from
Texas.
From Oklahoma. Just out of curiosity, was the maximum bet $300 at that casino?
Well, actually, when the promotion first came out, it was $300. And the same player who I went to Atlantic City with, KS, he had been there, I think, 2 days before with two other players, and they beat them up for like $25,000. By the time we got there, the max bet was reduced to $100, and then within an hour of us being there, they backed us off. But they let other players play. I mean, there were two other players who were known customers of this casino who were also betting the max bet of $100. They pushed our bets back, told us we couldn't play, and I went, "What am I doing different than those guys?" But you know, you can never win an argument with a casino suit.
Right. Well, they were locals, though.
They were locals and probably had lost their lungs over the last 6 months there. So, we'll give them some money back. Because, you know, Binion's used to do that around Christmas time. Jack would offer 2-to-1 blackjacks, but he would make it a max bet of $5. It was kind of like a Christmas reward to his local customers.
Yeah, and it was always a convention for every card counter in the world, basically.
Yeah, well, you sit down and you play all six
just
spots.
Just for the fun.
Yeah, you try to play all six spots. You get $30 into action,
Yeah.
So, I mean, I tell you, living here in Vegas, you get to see so many things that I've had some of my friends, I tell them a story, and they go, "Joe, you got to write a book. Some of these stories are hysterical." I mean, I've been surrounded by security guards at the Palms, and I know they're one of your sponsors, but I actually got surrounded by security guards there and told I couldn't eat at the buffet. I said, "Why?" They said, "Well, you're a known card count." I said, "What am I doing, counting the stuffed shells?" Pretty sad.
Anything ever interesting ever happened at the El Cortez to you?
That's another story. I'm just chock full of stories tonight. The El Cortez, one of the few places in town that still offer a single deck game that pays 3-to-2. And for anybody who's listening in, there's a lot of single deck games being offered around town, but they pay 6-to-5. You need to stay away from those games. You cannot beat those games. But the El Cortez is one of the few places still left in town that offers single deck with a 3-to-2 payout. And one night, myself, now it's never recommended for two advantage players to go sit down at the same table because your bets are basically going to look like the Rockettes, bets up, bets down. They're going to be sort of like in a kicking motion. So, but at the El Cortez, who cares if you get thrown out? So we went there and we bought in, I guess, what we considered a lot of money for El Cortez. I think I bought in for $500 and my buddy of mine bought in for $1,000. And the floor person came over and said, this is funny. She said, "You're exactly the kind of players the El Cortez is looking for." And me and my buddy looked at each other and went, "You're not going to be saying that in about 20 minutes, honey." And I was just betting medium reds to low greens, and my buddy was betting medium greens to low blacks. And he beat him for like $1,000. I beat him for like $500. And we left. And I went back and said, "Oh, this is pretty good. I'll go back there." They let me play. They didn't back me off. The next time I sat down, I put a bet in a circle, and the guy came over and pushed the bet back. And he said, "You can't play." And I said, "Why?" He goes, "Because you're counting." And I went, "Of course I'm counting. How else am I supposed to add up my hand to know whether I should hit or stand?" And the woman, the casinos have kind of brainwashed the general public into making them believe that card counting is a crime and it's illegal. And it was a woman who was playing, who was sitting on first base, and she goes, "Oh, my God, are you counting? That's illegal." So the casinos have done a real good job of getting the word out that card counters are criminals. We're not criminals, ladies and gentlemen. We just happen to not be
able. Some are.
Some are. We just don't check our brains at the door when we walk in. I mean, because, there's very few games in a casino that you can beat. One of the games is what Bob Dancer plays. That's video poker. Another game is blackjack. Another game is poker, which I've taken up now recently because of my
notoriety.
My inability to play blackjack. So I've played a lot of poker and sports betting.
Very good. This is interesting. We got a couple more questions for you, Joe. We're going to do some commercials first, but we're definitely going to come back and hear about a casino who will let him play blackjack but won't let him take insurance bets. All right. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else has. If you earn 1,000 points video poker or 400 slot club points, 400 slot machine points, between this past Sunday through the end of tonight, actually tomorrow morning, 3 a.m. You'll get a free Norbest turkey, which can be picked up Monday through Wednesday of next week, should you want Thanksgiving turkey. The double point day in November will be Thanksgiving Day itself, midnight to midnight, no limits. If you're looking for me, check out the Quick Quad machines during Graveyard. The free video poker class semester has ended. We'll be starting them again early next year, probably in mid-January. At the Palms, the $150,000 thanks for the cash drawings consist of 10 winners each Friday, another 10 on Saturday. Each of those 20 winners get $500, and at the end of the regular drawing on Saturday, one of those 20 winners walks away with $20,000. This makes the EV of $1,500, although 19 out of the 20 of people will receive $500 each. On Friday and Saturday evenings, you receive 5 times drawing tickets. For the Play, Earn, and Win gifts Monday, Wednesday, Friday through tomorrow, November 22nd, they include a color television set and a Chromebook computer. Tuesdays and Thursdays, you may earn free play. This essentially means double points for video poker players 2 days a week. At videopoker.com, the 7-day monthly contest begins this coming Sunday, November 24th, and goes through the end of the month, and it is Ultimate X. The daily contests prior to that are double super times paid today, Ultimate X tomorrow, and Saturday is classic single line Game King video poker. As always in their contest, picking the game with the highest variance is a smart play. Today's contest, double super times pay, is one I haven't spoken about very often. In regular super times pay, you pay 6 coins up front, and every 15 hands or so, you get a multiplier ranging from 2x to 10x. In double super times pay, you pay 7 coins up front, and there are 2 separate times you can get the multipliers. This doesn't change the strategy at all, and it adds about a 0.5% to the game. So that means if you can find it on an 8-5 bonus poker machine, instead of the normal 99.17%, it returns 99.67, which can be quite attractive with the right slot club and promotions. If, however, the best you can do is to find 8-5 jacks or better, which normally pays a pretty pitiful 97.3%, and now it returns 97.8%, it still sucks. Our guest next week will be, it's Thanksgiving, and we're not going to be here. We're going to rerun the show that we had with Royal Cat. That was a few weeks ago. Royal Cat is a Advantage video poker player who travels around. Our December 5th show will be UNLV professor David D. Schwartz, who has written a book called Grandissimo, The First Emperor of Las Vegas. This is a biography of Jay Sarno, the man who built both Caesar's Palace and Circus Circus. Sarno is a key part of Las Vegas history, an interesting man, but not always such a likable man. On December 12th, we'll be hosting Tommy Hyland and John Chang. These two men are both longtime managers of successful blackjack teams. We'll be talking to them about the do's and don'ts of running the teams. Okay, Joe, I briefly mentioned a casino would let you play blackjack, but they wouldn't let you take an insurance bet. What was that all about?
There was this goes back a little bit. There was a game that was invented by Howard Grossman called Super Fun 21, single deck game, and he sold it to casinos, and he assured them that no card counters would play this game because the rules were really bad. And the rules are bad because it pays even money for blackjack, and you can only get 2-1 on blackjack if it happens to be in diamonds. Now, we all know you're scheduled to get a blackjack once every 21 hands, and you're supposed to get a suited blackjack once every 42 hands, but it has to be in diamonds to get paid 2-1. So it's pretty far out there. But they have a lot of rules, and if you're a pretty knowledgeable guy or girl and you know how to use these rules, the game actually takes on a little bit of a positive spin fee. And then if you're able to get a pretty big spread out there. It's pretty good. So I was playing the single deck Super Fun 21. I'll even say where it was. It was at Sunset Station. They were letting me play, and the count got really good, and I had been kind of chipping up. Well, the count was really good, and there was no aces out. I bet $100. I get a blackjack. And in this game, they pay you, and the dealer's got an ace up. But in Super Fun 21, you get paid automatically if you have a blackjack. It doesn't matter if the dealer has a blackjack. It's not a push. So the dealer paid me my $100, took my hand, put it in a discard tray, and then asked the rest of the table whether they want to take insurance. I was sitting on third base, and she was about to go look. And I said, hold on a second. I want to take insurance. And she says to me, you can't take insurance. I said, why can't I take insurance? She goes, you don't have a hand. I said, well, that's because you took it away. Take it out of the discard tray, put it in front of me. You've already paid me on it. I want to take insurance. She goes, you cannot take insurance. I said, call the floor over. So the floor comes over. I said, she's offering insurance to the table. If she's offering it to everybody, she's got to offer it to me. He goes, but Joe, you don't have a hand. I said, I did have a hand. You happen to pay me on it, but I want to take insurance. Because, I don't know for sure, but mathematically, I'm pretty sure the dealer's got a blackjack there. I'm pretty sure the dealer's got a 10 in the hole. So they have this conference. They call the shift manager over. After about a solid 10 minutes, they said, okay, you can take insurance. So I put $50 out, and the dealer's got a blackjack. Pays me $100. I get off the table, and I walk over to the shift manager. I said, you look like you're upset. He goes, well, you know, Joe, I think you took a shot at me. I said, how do you feel I took a shot at you? He said, well, you know, you just took a – I said, I took a shot at you. You paid me 2-1 on a bet that's supposed to mathematically play about 2.25-1. I mean, because there's 16 pitcher cards, face cards in the deck, and there's 36 other cards.
Yep.
So it shouldn't pay 2-1. It should pay like 2.25-1. So how am I taking a shot at you when you're giving me a bad payoff here? So he just looked at me like, I just feel like you're taking a shot at me. So that's the story. They let me play blackjack, but they wouldn't book my insurance bet until I had to have like a meeting, a corporate meeting to get me to take, allow me to put my insurance bet out there. So, but now since that day, I'm not able to play blackjack there anymore either. So
I would have, I think that I would have not chosen to make a scene on that. I would have drawn too much attention that I was too knowledgeable.
But it is just the kind of idiot decision, you know. I mean, think about it if he's not a card counter.
Right. They want you to take insurance.
The amount of time it takes talking about it has cost the casino more money than if they just said, okay, fine. You know what I mean? It's people are there to have a good time. Let them play.
You want to
take insurance? Fine.
You know? Richard, I laugh because insurance is actually a really bad bet. And I love when I'm out playing sometimes, I hear dealers telling tourists, oh, you should only take insurance when you have a 20. Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? You have two of the cards that the dealer needs to have a blackjack. Why would you encourage them to take insurance then?
We have about 30 seconds. You're exactly right, but the whole point is one of the things you do when you are a good counter is to pretend like you're not knowledgeable and that the insurance is to actually insure your hand rather than just being a bet as to whether or not the dealer has a hold card.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And maybe for longevity purposes, it was a bad
play. Probably barring at the place.
All right. We're essentially out of time. Thank you, Joe Payne.
Thank you,
Richard Munchen. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.